Hi, I'm Zach Hunter, Sports Information Director for the BYU Men's Track and Field Team. I've had the privilege of working with many of the 9 current and former BYU Cougars headed to the 2024 Paris Olympic Games. These former BYU athletes headed to the Olympics have unique qualities and values that they have learned in their time in the BYU athletic system that can apply to anyone and help in everybody's own journey through life. Today we sit down with Dr. Ian Hunter. This is Cougar Gold.
So it turned out to be a great day, and we thought saving 3% energy probably counts for more than 4 seconds of time. So we started calling them as $10,000 shoes.
Dr. Ian Hunter is a sports scientist and biomechanics professor at BYU. He is also a steeplechase biomechanist for USA Track and Field. He works heavily with the current and professional distance runners, with his work heavily focused on the super shoe, shoes that professional distance runners have picked up in the past few years that have accelerated performance dramatically. He isn't just a scientist, however, but a runner in his own right. In 2023, he was number one in the world in his age group for the marathon and has a personal best time of 2 hours and 20 minutes at the 26.2-mile distance. I love this conversation with Dr. Hunter. It was fascinating to sit down and see another side of the sport and how people like him find joy in helping athletes achieve their Olympic dreams. And now my conversation with Dr. Ian Hunter.
The thing with that name, Jared Rotinsky, Josh's brother, came up with it. One day I'm in the locker room and he just said, "What's up, Doc?" And it just kind of stuck. Yeah. And so he did it enough times and others started and it happened. And I didn't like it.
You didn't like it? Oh.
No, because Doc was Phil Olson, who was one of my mentors throughout the years. And I don't know when he started at BYU. It was like a 40-something year career, though. And he was like the professor of all of the professors and was a complete athlete throughout his life and so on. He died last year. And he was Doc. And so when they started calling me Doc and he was still faculty, I thought, no, that's not me. I haven't earned that because it was a name that meant something to me. But after he retired and all the conversations I had with Doc, and which those guys never knew, but I started accepting it as a term like coach. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot of people get called coach, but my coaches, calling them coach is like a term of respect. Mm-hmm. And it kind of felt like, oh, they appreciate me. What it feels. So now I kind of like it and embraced it, but it had more meaning to that, especially at first. It was like, no, that's not me. I haven't earned that. Yeah. But I've had a lot of years being called it now. And
you've done like so many different things with inside that. We're going to talk about the super shoe, which a lot of people hear about and you've done a lot of research on as well.
Right.
But maybe just describe for me and the listeners, what is kind of your role at BYU?
So what I get paid for is to be a biomechanics professor in the exercise science department. And that involves teaching a few sections of biomechanics to the undergrad students each year, which is basically the physics of the body, how it works and moves and applies forces in all kinds of activities. My research is all focused on performance and distance running, though, which includes the mechanics of how we run, along with, in recent years, a lot with the footwear.
That's so cool. I love to nerd out a little bit. I'm a comms major, and so I only know a little bit of this science, really, but from my perspective, it's really cool to see kind of the science behind it, why things work.
Right.
And I think a lot of people watching the Olympics, they just see a guy crossing the finish line, mm-hmm. and they're like, man, he just ran his heart out. Look at that. Pure talent. But there's a lot more to it.
There is.
How did you get into kind of this field of research? You were a runner here at BYU.
Right.
And how did it, I guess, transition into where you're at now?
I always had an interest in being a coach. What Coach Istone does is what my thoughts were as I was going through my degrees here. But when I did a master's degree in coaching, I did a lot of research in running with the professor that was working biomechanics back then. And that really sparked my interests. And I learned I can still be involved in the sport, even as a runner and a researcher, if I go the direction of becoming a professor instead. So there's maybe a lot more detail within how that story all came about in the end. But I figured in the end, I got one of my two top choices of job, and not many people get that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, and just to be connected in the world that you love so much in any way is a real blessing. What have you done in your research? Like, if you were to say this is like my proudest accomplishment, what would it be?
Wow. That takes a little thinking. I need a good answer there. it probably goes away from an answer that's here's the greatest finding that I've come across, because most of them are really somewhat minimal. It's a little piece of the puzzle. It's not like I solved everything with one amazing study, but it would be the connections with all the people along the way, whether they're my own students, my grad students, some undergrad workers, the having one of our pros in the lab and we're testing shoes and figuring out what will work best for them. So there's been a lot of little fun successes along the way. But when I look back, I'd say the thing I'm most proud of is getting connected with all the right people to help me grow better and hopefully mentor them a bit along the way.
That is such what like track and field is to a T, is just everybody is learning something and then helping someone else out. There is competition for sure, and it can be cutthroat, but I like that it's everyone's kind of elevating together. Yeah. When you say we're testing the shoes out in the lab, what is that like?
Well, the funnest one is probably to tell the story of Jared Ward, the first time we started doing this testing.
And so Jared Ward, for the listeners, he was in 2016 Rio Olympics, and he placed sixth place in the marathon.
Yeah, yeah.
So we
that
love
was
Jared
a proud
Ward.
Moment.
Yeah, that was
he
a
did the work, but we were all proud of him when he
you
crossed
could put your
line.
Name attached beneath.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was actually after that race. He raced those Rio Olympics in this shoe.
Ooh, we got
here.
The shoe.
This isn't actually the one he wore. This is my size, but same color scheme and everything.
And what kind of shoe is that?
This is the Saucony Type A, which was the marathoning shoe back then, at least for that kind of level runner. And you compare it to what he was competing against was prototypes of this Nike Vaporfly. This is when it finally got released. But about a year after those Rio Olympics, he was entered in the New York Marathon, and he was planning on actually the Saucony Kinvara, which is a little bit more cushioned than the one he'd raced in Rio. And on Monday before the race, a box of shoes showed up. They were prototypes of their first super shoe. There were three pairs of them, and the workout before the marathon on race week for us is either 3 or 4 times a mile at race pace with 2-minute recoveries. So instead of doing that on the track, we decided let's test these three shoes compared to the Kinvara and see which one you use the least energy in. So that was Wednesday, and we do this 4-by-mile workout on the treadmill, measuring his oxygen uptake so we can tell how much energy he's using. We did the Kinvara first and then two of the prototypes, and he was sitting at 50-point-something milliliters of oxygen per minute, which is where he should be at the pace we had him going. But it was the same for all three shoes. Then he put on the last one, which was just kind of randomly, we didn't know the differences between the shoes, but it happened to be the one that had the lowest density foam. It was squishier than the rest. And it all of a sudden went 3% less energy using that shoe. So I was trying not to get excited and tell him as I see the data coming in. But he finishes and I'm like, hey, Jared, come look at this. And he's like, I think I want to wear this shoe. And 3 days later, you don't change your shoe when you're that kind of level
that
runner
fast, yeah.
the week of the race that you've never worn before. But he called Saucony and he asked Spencer out there, hey, this shoe tested so well for me. I think I want to wear it for New York. And he said, Jared, we just put that shoe together. I don't know if it even hold up for the race.
If it will stay together.
Yeah, you know, we tugged at it it seems sturdy. He did one more run in it.
That's the science I like that I try is I tug at things.
Feels good. Why not? Yeah. So he used that shoe. He did one more run in it just to make sure it really felt good. And he ended up coming around the final turn, taking a glance and seeing Scott Fauble, who was at the time the second American coming in. And he thought, I'm tired. I don't know if we can hold him off. And he looks like he's moving. But Jared was able to hold him off. I think he was 4 seconds ahead of Scott, which means 25,000 for first American instead of 15 for second. And he was sixth overall in that one also. So it turned out to be a great day. And we thought saving 3% energy probably counts for more than 4 seconds of time. So we started calling them his $10,000 shoes.
Wow.
Since that time, it's progressed to improvements like this, where these ones will be coming out really soon. The foam's been improved a lot, the plate configuration, the shape of the shoe, ton of different improvements across all the companies. And we do these same kind of tests with Connor and Clayton and others that we want to have them in the best shoe for them from their company when race day comes.
So do you research when you have these findings, right, that you did with Jared, for instance, and do you take those back to the company or the brand of the shoe and say, hey, this is what we found, and is it a collaborative process, or what is that like?
It is with Saucony. That's who I'm partnered with for our lab. So they send us a lot of shoes, but we also work with Jared and do a lot of back and forth with what we learn there. We're also looking at the forces and the time on the ground and how their running mechanics change with each shoe. So with Clayton, it was really interesting. And he gives feedback to them, but I don't work directly with ASICS. But Clayton, he was second at the Olympic trials in February, so he's there representing the U.S. And he was choosing between two models of ASICS shoes, and the testing we did helped narrow it down because he used less energy. But we also noticed he was taking longer steps at the same speed in the one that he selected for Rio, for Paris. And so there's a lot of back and forth. Saucony's the only one that I'm actually back and forth with directly. When it's Connor, Clayton, Rory, others, then they're just working with the people they're connected with in their companies.
That's so cool. I love to hear kind of how that process works. So you mentioned, you work with athletes, like for Jared, for instance, and you say, hey, I have this finding. This is what the data is showing. Is it always like, hey, the athletes always trust the data? Or is it sometimes like, yeah, you kind of have to show them and say, hey, this is what we feel would be best? Or is it kind of sometimes athletes are like, this is what feels good. This is what my gut's saying. And sometimes it's kind of maybe a battle. Do you see that at all?
Yeah, with Clayton, I did a bit. When we found out this shoe works better for you, he was a little surprised, because he felt better in the other. So there was some decision-making to do, and we trust the numbers generally, but there is some variability in these measurements we do. They're not perfect. On the most recent shoe that we tested Jared in, we did 3 days of it, because the first day we thought, it cannot be that much better.
Yeah.
And so we did 2 more days, and it confirmed this shoe really is that much better. And you'll see that across the companies. Clayton will bring something in, Connor will bring something in, and we find, this isn't what we expected. Connor had some big changes on shoes his first year of professional running, where he was finding the combination of how they feel along with the data that we're giving makes the complete decision.
Mm-hmm. And when you're testing these and they're going to these big races, right? Are you there with them? Are you doing research there? Or is it kind of just you work in Provo and then they send out and then you get data afterward? How does that work?
In the recent Olympic trial, the Olympic trials for this year, marathon and track and field, I had either two or three of my students out there with me that were helping collect data. So at the marathon trials, it was a looped course where they came by three times. So we set up in two locations to get six unique measurements of how they're changing throughout the race. And this wasn't for Connor or Clayton or we had, was it seven there in the Olympic trials, I think, from BYU, all in that marathon. But this was for general learning. You know, my research is not just individuals coming in. Mostly we're trying to find more global answers about things. So at the marathon trials, we were focused on how are their running mechanics changing throughout the race. So we get six measurements, and we can find the faster runners change in this way compared to what the slower ones were doing, and answering those kind of questions.
How do they change?
We are still working through those data. It's a long process on what we did out there with the video. So I have a group of students that are doing my work for me. It's kind of nice to delegate that.
Yeah, that's good.
We're about halfway through, so there's not really anything preliminary to say. I did have another Olympian, Maggie Chan, was here years ago, did her thesis with me, focusing on the Utah Valley Marathon, and just did 5K in and then 5K to go. And she did find there were some differences going on where the top finishers were less likely to have changes in their running mechanics, even after we account for any speed changes going on. The ones that are maintaining their form better are the ones that are finishing better, which is probably expected, but we at least wanted to get some numbers to it and some knowledge there. Then the trials for track, I was actually there for USA Track and Field. I work with them with the steeplechasers, and that was a really fun year to be doing that with the success that BYU had. But just in general, that women's race, the times that they ran up front were incredible. So it was around like 14-second best times for that group. And then you throw in James and what he did. Kenny was amazing, but we expected it.
Yeah.
And we knew he would be. But our job there was setting up at the water jump and then one of the regular barriers to see how their running mechanics relate to how much they maintain their speed as they run through those obstacles. And then we send out reports to the athletes, plus we can use what we learn in our own research and articles.
So you send that data. Like, so let's take the steeplechase, for instance, right? He runs across it, or he crosses the barrier, right? Are you looking at like where his foot placement is and mm-hmm. like how fast he is out of the water jump and giving that data to him to decide what to do with it with Coach Istone? Or what does that
mix.
Process look
yeah,
like?
Yeah, I've learned with different athletes and coaches through the years, once I'm back and forth with them enough, I kind of learn here's how they like to approach it. So there are some that I just send the data and say, congratulations on a great year. Here's your information. Let me know if you have any questions. Others, I'll write up a page of here's what I think is going on with the water jump for you. These are some adjustments I'd recommend you consider. And they seem to love it. And we're often back and forth a bit with some of my feedback. So it depends on the person.
Depends on the relationship that you have with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here I just send it to their coach and the athlete, and sometimes we're involving the strength coach and athletic trainer if there's some things related to injury or weaknesses that may be going on. When we see when you push off your left side, that's different than the right, and here's some things we might want to consider with the strength coach or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of those relationships that you have with these athletes, what for the average watcher, average viewer of the Olympics, would you want them to know about these athletes that you spent so much time with? Is there any like certain qualities that you've really come to see throughout the years of these high level athletes that have just stood out to you?
For sure. Some of them related to running.
Yeah. Hey, that's okay.
You kind of get that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm always, Jared Ward's the one that I've looked up to so much through the years. And I always think, you know, when I grow up, I want to be more like Jared, even though I'm old enough to be his dad. That's still something that I feel. And I could say that about a lot of them. When I hear the stories of Connor and Clayton on the way to the start line at the Olympic trials and what was going through their heads and so on. I just realized it's not all about the running. And there's so many great attributes in terms of the motivations that they have that do relate to running. But then also, here's what's important in life. And you can see why, at least one of the reasons why they're so good at what they do is they have such a well-rounded life, focusing on body, mind, and spirit in so many areas that they include in their lives.
That's what I've kind of seen from talking with all these Olympians, is that they have common kind of trends. One stood out to me. We were talking with Courtney Weymouth the other day, but about the word opportunity, and how a lot she views a lot of what she's given as an opportunity. And Kenneth also used that word mm-hmm. as well, opportunity. And I think that's kind of what I've seen, is a lot of these Olympians, like you said, are well-rounded people. They have a good mindset and perspective about this amazing opportunity that they're having.
Right.
And they're taking advantage of all the resources that you give them or their strength coach to really just focus in on how can I live the most out of this opportunity.
Right. When you look at where a lot of them come from, you know, Connor's not from a large town. You can't call it a city, even where
Smithfield. Is it Smithfield? I'm blanking on it.
I forgot which city. It was Skyview High School.
Skyview High School.
I remember that much.
Okay, we'll look that up.
And you take Panguitch, Utah.
Yeah.
These are people that didn't come from getting all this excitement around them as they grew up, and they got some notoriety because they were good high school runners. But if you take all of the current Olympic team that's coming out of BYU, or at least recent graduates, they are not ones, for the most part, that were incredible standouts in high school. Or at least you wouldn't think, oh, that'll be our next Olympic trials champion. So they've developed themselves so well, and it also makes them so grateful for the opportunities because of what background was in place. That sounds like I'm saying they weren't great in high school, but the levels that they've stepped up during their time at BYU and since is really incredible to see. So that, I think, instills some gratitude for the opportunities.
And well, that's what I've seen too, is that they never let up really of their pursuit of more performance, really. It's like they never like, oh, I made the Olympic team, time to coast. Like James right. Corrigan is not that way at yeah. all. Man put off his honeymoon so that he could train a little bit. But that's kind of what I've seen is, yeah, they are constantly elevating. But yeah, they have come through all different kind of backgrounds, and they do have common kind of themes there too.
Yeah,
I do want to take the last little bit to kind of just share light on you, because you aren't just a sports scientist, but you are an avid runner. You have a lot going on in your life too.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a little kind of lightning round, just asking you some questions. So what is your 800 meter time for the listeners?
Currently, I have no idea, but it's been a while. But back in my college days, it was 149.
149, which is insane. And then your marathon as well. What is your all-time record in the marathon?
That's 220.
220. 2 hours and 20 minutes. And that is, you were number one, we were doing our research, number one in your age group, 51 to 54, right?
Let's is that see. The age group? I think it goes 50 to 54.
50 to yeah. 54 for in the world, right?
Right.
The world rankings. That is so impressive. And so you're not just a scientist who like sits on their chair and is just analyzing things. You are an active member of the sport. And maybe yeah. that helps kind of when you're talking to these athletes. It's like, hey, I run too. Like,
you know, when someone throws out an impressive stat, then people seem to just have some, I can trust this guy. He knows what he's doing. Just it doesn't necessarily relate.
Yeah.
But at least it gets people's attention. They think, oh, he's done it. So maybe I can believe some of the things shared here. Well, so I think you're right about that.
That's what Rory has said, Rory Linkletter in the marathon. He's talked about how he really was looking for a coach that in his professional world that also had run. And that was like a big thing for him. And there's many that haven't, but that was something that he wanted. And so, yeah, I think background or does matter, even if maybe on paper it doesn't.
Well, even if it's not the coaching knowledge or biomechanics knowledge, there's this emotional component to it where they get it. They understand. They've been there. They felt the experiences, and that really helps you connect with someone better.
They've been in that pain cave.
Yeah. Coach Eystone's been there. You know Ryan Hole that's coaching Rory. He's been there many times. And so, yeah, it really helps when you want to connect with the right person.
Yeah. Next question we wanted to ask, what was your first Olympic memory?
Yeah, so the first really impactful Olympic memory that I have is right as I was finishing my church mission in 1992, Frank Fredericks, who had been a teammate my freshman year at BYU, was there representing Namibia, and he earned 2 silver medals there. He replicated that again in 1996, but that got me some added excitement of here's what the Olympics are about. When there's someone that you actually are somewhat connected with doing it, then it adds a whole lot more excitement. Now, Frank was a teammate, but we were doing completely different events, and it still got some excitement going. So now you add that to what's going on here. We've got all these distance runners doing great things that I've trained with through the years, and it's so much more impactful and meaningful and exciting. So as soon as Connor and Clayton made the team, I was looking for flights of, okay, Adrian, we're heading to Paris this year.
Oh, that's so fun. So,
but it's just so much excitement. But it began just seeing a teammate that made the team and then ended up performing really well. And that just gets more and more impactful as the years go by and others make it through the years from BYU.
Yeah, and you've helped so many that have been in headed to the Olympics and those things. That's an interesting question too. Is what is your first Olympic memory that we've asked these Olympians? And so, yeah, for the listeners, just go check out the other episodes because it is so interesting where they recognize they watch it on TV with their parents as a kid, and then they're just like, "Oh, I think I could do that." Mm-hmm. Courtney Wayman again, plug for her episode. She was talking about how she just told her parents one day in high school, she's like, I'm going to make the Olympics. And she was like, wait, like, her parents were like, yeah, for sure. Yeah, we totally support that. And then, but no, they have that moment and then they choose to make an action there. And I think just for the rest of us too, who aren't Olympians, the Olympics are such a meaningful kind of experience and can be. And so it's fun to kind of see everyone's little tie into that too.
Yeah, a lot of people dream about being an Olympian and don't make it. But there's so many that maybe it's all of them that do make it, did dream of it.
Yeah, at one point.
And some it's pretty early in life.
Yeah. from this amazing conversation we've had today, is there anything that you think that the listeners should know about either your work or about these Olympians that you've come across while they're watching the Olympic Games in Paris that we haven't talked about?
I think one of the really cool things to do is learn their stories along the way. So what you're doing here is great because then you get connected with the people. When you have someone in the Olympics and you watch a certain final, you just see a bunch of names that maybe you've heard of, but you don't really know who they are. But when you go in and really learn about these people and see them on the start line, you're so much more invested. It's so much more exciting to be a part of and feel like, you know, even if you've never met them actually, it adds so much excitement to the experience of watching and working through the Olympics. So that'd be my best advice, is encouraging people to get online and search for Kenneth Rook's 2023. Yeah. If anyone hasn't seen that race. So there's some great background stories, and these Olympians we have are incredible. I would want to say all those that were in the Olympic trials, I think we had 17 there, and those that didn't make it, there's just amazing people and stories that are here and available that are so easy to come across these days that can impact who the reader or listener is, and that really can make a difference in how people approach their own lives.
Very well said. Yeah. Well, I just want to thank you for taking the time today to talk about shoes, about science, about running, and just kind of get your take on the Olympic Games in Paris. So thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
What an amazing conversation with Dr. Hunter, and what a fascinating person he really is. I'm so grateful to know of people like him that help these athletes be their best selves. For a full list of BYU athletes in the Olympic Games, see BYUCougars.com. Cougar Gold is partnered with BYU Athletics and produced by Cleon Wall, Ethan Horn, and Jonas Guffey. Episodes are available on BYURadio.org, the BYU Radio app, and wherever you can find podcasts.